Okay, back on the record. We got the mics open again. Everybody just settle into their chairs. The witness is back on the stand. We were moving to commissioner's questions, and Chairman Koch deferred, at least temporarily, to Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Oh, I get to go first?
Go ahead.
He deferred
really?
To you.
Wow.
You wanted the break, so you're all fresh and ready to go.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Just got to review my questions really quick here to make sure. Can you, Ms. McCartan talked a bit about the difference between the purchase, the power purchases, and the capacity need now with the wind. The wind power purchases and the need with these proposals to address capacity between 2017 and 2019. Can you tell me if any of the wind proposals will provide some of the need on capacity? Those purchase agreements, will they address a capacity issue as well to a certain percentage?
Commissioner, they will. You were correct that it's something like 13 or 14% of the nameplate capacity of wind power will receive capacity credit. However, in this case, as Ms. McCartan pointed out, because of transmission constraints in the region, we're not able to get credit for that wind capacity until about 2020.
Okay. We've talked a fair amount, especially with Mitch, about the analysis on these projects. And you've said that the Hankinson projects, the Red River gas plant projects, relied more heavily on outer years. And so since you guys are directing the terms of the analysis, why didn't you make them the same? So that you could compare them more accurately.
In essence, that's what the model tries to do. It, rather than just isolate each individual generation proposal and try to compare them, the model takes a look at how that generator performs along with the rest of our generation over an extended period of time. The model tries to anticipate when we'll need to add that next generator as load continues to grow. It looks at all of the ins and outs of adding and maintaining and operating our system over an extended period of time. And so we are trying to do an apples-to-apples comparison rather than trying to compare a peaking unit with a combined cycle unit that have very different roles in that generation fleet. And so when you look at it on a system basis, that whole business about when do the benefits show up starts to reveal itself. And again, I think Steve Wishart can help you in more detail okay. with that.
And then along the same lines, I realize that you just need to address this capacity in the near term, 2017 to 2019. But in both the power purchase agreements, which would be 20 years, and if you're investing in a plant, which would be, you know, indefinitely, you have to consider much longer than that. So why the focus on the first few years? It's not really, doesn't seem relevant to just focus on the first few years as being your primary factors to drive the decision.
We agree. And again, that's what that strategist model is trying to do, is take a 30 or 40-year look instead of just a few-year look. The 17 to 19 time frame is the when the problem surfaces, not a constraint on how you evaluate various proposals. It's the threshold of when do we have to have something in service to maintain enough generation to meet peak demand. And so it's the threshold or the trigger. Whereas when evaluating and comparing the alternatives, we try to do exactly as you outlined, take a longer view.
So in making your choice, you should be looking at what makes the most sense for the long view.
That's our perspective, yes.
And do you feel that you have done that in advocating with the Minnesota Commission to go with the power purchase agreements versus the Red River Valley units?
That was our motivation and judgment, yes.
I disagree. Let's see here. Then one more question on the Hankinson, or the plan number three, I'm going to call it. So you need about 300 megawatts by 2019, according to your charts. And it looks to me like you're getting more than you need, which we've talked about already. But if you said earlier that the GRE capacity credits were probably not that great of a deal. They seemed sort of expensive compared to what you can buy in the market. So I'm curious, A, why didn't you find cheaper ones on the market? You can't. They come to you. Okay, never mind that. What about just not having that? You'd still have, take those out, you'd still have 316 megawatts, which is more than you need. And then surely this would have reduced the differential in cost to be more competitive with Plan 1 and 2.
It's my understanding that Mr. Wishart evaluated something very similar to that, and he can probably give you better detail than I can.
All right. The GRE capacity credits, are those based on some of their coal-fired units, extra capacity at their coal-fired units?
It's a system-wide number. Okay. They add up the total generation available to them and decide what they need to meet their peak demand and reserve requirements, and anything above that is excess capacity credits, and it's not specific to any power plant.
Would the Minnesota Commission allow you to buy additional coal-fired power from them?
We wouldn't be buying power.
Well, obviously,
these credits do not have any electric energy associated with them.
Do you just have to have this on paper?
I'm sorry.
You just have to have it on paper, but what if you needed them? I mean, you've talked about this needing to be, you know, available instantaneously for customer demand. If you actually needed that power, they must have to have it to back it up.
Mr. Wishart can give you a lot better detail than I can about how MISO accounts for reserve requirements and adequate capacity, but my understanding is that they're simply paper credits that can be applied toward meeting resource adequacy requirements as part of that reserve margin, and so there's no actual energy production associated with it.
Okay. Then can you provide, you talked a bit about the cancellation, that there'd be cancellation terms available in these power purchase agreements. Kind of, if it's a 20-year contract, there must be a pretty stiff penalty for canceling early, since they're building on, they're adding units to meet these. Am I understanding cancellation correctly, where you could actually get out of the contract?
Not so much get out of the contract during the entire 20-year term, but get out of the contract for a short period of time between now and 2018 or 19.
Oh, I see. So before you actually really start the...
So we can react to changing circumstances before the unit is placed in service.
But there's no conditions that would allow you to back out once you're... The unit is built and you're committed for 20 years then, even if things change.
Correct. Typically not.
Okay. And then I have some questions about the Minnesota solar mandate and that role in this, but would those be best for Steve or for you?
Steve knows those in detail. So.
Okay. Okay. I think that's all my questions for you, Jim. Thank you very much.
Chairman Koch.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just thank you for your testimony, Jim. The just a couple, I guess, probing questions. You said something, I don't remember exactly who it was to, of something about a, well, it's a judgment call that weighs more than maybe strategist does, something to that. I don't get it. Sometimes you put all your weight in strategist and you say, it's strategist says, so it's got to be. And then you tell me, well, but it's my judgment call, it ain't right. I mean, so do you use strategists when you want, and then you use your judgment when it fits your needs because it makes other commissions happy?
I hope I have never said that strategist says, so therefore it's got to be the right answer.
It's certainly heavily implied in many proceedings that we've had with this company.
On occasion, it can be easy shorthand, but that's never really the case, Commissioner. I agree.
So when you say that judgment, I think your answer was the people in resource planning have that judgment? Or does it go all the way to the top, that what the head of the company? To me, if it's a judgment call, if I was in charge of the company, I'd want to be making that judgment call.
Commissioner, we have a steering committee of senior executives that reviews all of the information that we're presenting here and our recommendations. And
fair enough. The Commissioner Crispin teed something up that I'd never thought of before about how the Minnesota process as it plays out may violate North Dakota state law on lowest cost alternative. Had you ever heard of that in any other jurisdictions before?
There is always this friction between the policies of jurisdictions. The whole question of whether one state's decision violates law in another state is something I've not heard much about.
But Minnesota does have the ruling on no new coal-fired generation that North Dakota has been very active against Minnesota on, that I'm not even sure that's at right now on the final on that, but you must be aware of that.
I'm generally aware of that. That's
okay.
Right.
Well, we'll just see how that plays out. Do you know if Xcel, I'm sure you do actually, does Xcel Energy have any generation in South Dakota?
Yes.
Do you have any generation in Wisconsin?
Yes.
So why would North Dakota be the outlier in that? I mean, it just, why?
To date, it's been about how to best locate generation that takes advantage of existing resources to benefit of all of our customers. And we've always faced circumstances where we can minimize cost by placing generation in other locations.
The MISO, and always a moving target, their thoughts last week in their public discussion with the commissioners throughout the MISO region is 8 gigawatts short. I'm just curious how they can say 8 gigawatts short, and I think they've tied it to some advanced coal retirements because of the CO2 proposed rules, that it lends me to think that you're going to need everything you want to build and everything you're going to have to build more. But you're saying, though, that you might not even need hardly any of this.
When Xcel Energy looks at its customers' peak demand and compare that to our generation, we get this 300-megawatt potential resource need. The 8 gigawatts is in the larger MISO market, which doesn't change our resource assessment internally, but to me does suggest that it may be prudent not to rely on the MISO wholesale market, which reinforces the idea that we probably should think hard about being prepared to add generation so that we can self-generate to meet our customers' needs.
Are you comfortable with MISO's forecast?
I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts in that 8-gigawatt prediction. Those are, as I understand it, coal-fired power plant retirements, in situations where the utility hasn't yet declared what they're going to replace that generation with. But normal utility practice would be to replace existing generation with similar amounts of new generation as part of the retirement process.
Sure. Just the last kind of just your thoughts. You've been doing this a long time, and I'm just still trying to follow the logic here of Xcel Energy files a request for ADP for the Black Dog plant in Minnesota, and then two plants in North Dakota, which are presumed rebuttable presumption that unless you make your case that they're not prudent, they're prudent. And now you're trying to make your case that they're not prudent at this time. I mean, why don't you now pull back this whole request and say, you know what, there's not enough information. Let's just pull it back now. Because you're asking us to make a decision with no information whatsoever that can be nailed upon.
Commissioner, if that's the commission's preference, we certainly can do that. That's what we tried to, or what Ms. McCartan tried to communicate in her opening remarks, is that with regard to the Red River Valley units, we don't need an ADP decision imminently.
But you
we could come at the time we asked for it. We didn't know what the competition was.
But still, why have a hearing when you're the first thing out of the company is going to be, you know what, we don't need it now. Why not just send us the letter ahead of time as opposed to have a hearing and then we don't have information to make decisions on that's concrete information?
Commissioner, in my view, this hearing is an opportunity to inform Minnesota as much as it is to help you make decisions.
So you view that Minnesota Commission would pay attention to what happens in this hearing?
Yes.
And how would you think the Minnesota, and I know you can't speak for them, but you have had experience in front of them, and I haven't, if this commission approved all three plants as prudent right now? We went completely the other way. How do you think the Minnesota Commission would view that?
You're correct. I cannot speak for them. I don't know. We're all plowing
the
ground.
How would you testify to them of the importance of this commission's decision to sway their decision that those Red River plants are good ideas? Because the numbers are really close. I could make a strong case that the numbers are within an error rate, and there's a lot of variables in that. These numbers are almost identical when you take out some of the mathematical rounding up and down.
Throughout our testimony, we have tried to make points similar to that. We are on the record with our recommendation, so I don't think we can change our recommendation to the Minnesota Commission, but I would think they'd pay attention.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Christmas.
How old is the strategist model?
Commissioner, I don't know. Mr. Wishart might.
Is that something that you, like a license that you buy and use?
Correct.
And can you adjust it?
I don't believe you adjust the actual mechanics of the model itself. You provide it with input assumptions.
So the assumptions that you input, with each proposal that you're going to look at or each idea you're going to look at, do you always, as a whoever is running the operating the program, does someone always kind of go through manually and look at how the model is weighting different circumstances and variables to see if, based on new things that I'm sure there's new things that come up in every case, to see whether this thing is still accurate or if there's something in there that defies logic based on new circumstances and variables?
Commissioner, we spend a great deal of time doing, in essence, that is testing what the impact is if you change input assumptions, testing what the impact is with regard to whether the model is predicting benefits early or late in the process, as I talked about earlier, air checking because it requires a ton of data to be inputted to make sure that what's coming out is based on as good of assumptions as we can put together without errors. I mean, yes, there's a lot of sensitivity testing and evaluating the results that Steve Wisher can give you a lot more detail.
And so would I be right in assuming then that in preparing for the Minnesota case, in the case of GRE's capacity credit proposal, you would have weighed in the externality costs that Minnesota once used?
We did both, with and without, yes.
But what did you use when you calculated? You said that it was a more expensive proposal.
When looking at the actual cost of the capacity credits, we compared them without adding externality values.
Is it your testimony then that construction of new generation in the Fargo area would not enhance local reliability?
I think if we could locate generation in the Fargo area, it would in some qualitative manner enhance reliability. Whether generation 70 miles away in Hankinson provides that kind of benefit is a little more uncertain. It's 70 miles away, it's exposed to the reliability of the transmission system in between.
Okay, I get the second part about the 70 miles. I don't really understand what some qualitative manner means. So does the Fargo area, would they have greater reliability if you went with the Hankinson proposals than they would if you went with the third-party proposals that are now being suggested? Or a tie?
I have a great deal of difficulty boiling it down to a yes or no. It would depend on the circumstance. In what seems to me to be an extremely unlikely event that you lose all of the transmission providing reliability to Fargo, are you still going to have a Hankinson unit and the 230 kV line between there and Fargo? If that very unlikely scenario were to occur, you might have some additional enhanced ability to minimize outages or to restore the system after the problem.
So it would be a very unlikely scenario where the Red River Valley units would provide additional
It's an extreme outage circumstance, yeah.
Okay. I get no further questions.
Mr. Norrell. I'll go back.
In your opinion, Mr. Alders, is the Black Dog CT, is that a prudent resource addition?
Yes, it is. Very cost effective. We can utilize an existing power plant site with all of its infrastructure and add 200 megawatts at very low cost.
How about the Hankinson ones? Because it sounded like when Commissioner Kalk asked you that it might not be a prudent. Are the Hankinson CTs a prudent resource acquisition?
I think they're going to be at some point. Our judgment is not as the result of this acquisition.
Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
How do the third-party negotiations if they do at all, affect the prudence of Black Dog?
We don't believe they will. We believe the Black Dog 6 unit is the most cost-effective thing to do regardless.
If I'm reading page 9, the table on page 9 correctly, the Plan 1 and Plan 2 that we've been talking about, under Plan 1, Black Dog would go into service in 2018. Under Plan 2, it would go into service in 2019. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Assuming that, when would you need to pull the trigger on building Black Dog?
It's approximately a 3-year development period for building a unit, so 2018 would be in the 2017, 16, early in 2015, so the end of next year in essence.
And I guess the reason for my question is it seems like a lot of this is timing, but why do you need or want ADP on Black Dog now with all that's going on?
Because we believe it's a prudent addition to our system under all circumstances, with the exception of the scenario where the resource need is significantly reduced. And even then, it becomes a question of timing more than whether or not it's prudent to add the resource.
That's, I don't want to over-summarize here, but in Ms. McCartan's testimony, and I think it's in several people's testimony, I just have a note of it on hers, but there's discussion about continually evaluating the need and additional information coming in 2014 and 2015, and that may change plans, which may change whether any of these are prudent, correct?
Correct.
So tell me why it wouldn't possibly be jumping the gun to determine they're prudent now when we know there's additional information that could affect that decision before the decision is needed.
That's always the situation we find ourselves in. The long lead time associated with making decisions and then building resources is such that there's always change. And so you're always in this circumstance of reevaluating and trying to determine whether or not it continues to be prudent to proceed. The decision in early 2014 is necessary so that we can have resources in place in that 17 to 19 time frame should it be necessary to build all 300 and some megawatts. That's not mutually exclusive from the proposition that it's also important to have flexibility and adjust as time passes if that's the thing to do. We're in a situation where we're asking the commission for an ADP in large part because that's the vehicle we have available to get North Dakota Commission's input on these kinds of decisions. And you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, something might change. But is it prudent to make a decision to proceed with all of the built-in flexibility is the question on the table, I think, today.
Are you familiar with Mr. Diller's testimony?
Yes.
Maybe over-summarizing it or oversimplifying it, but my general summary of it would be determine Red River Valley 1 and 2 are prudent and require them to be built in, I think, 2025 and then 2035. Is that fair enough for the purposes of what he said?
That seems to be the general sentiment to me.
What are your thoughts on that?
In some ways, it is similar to our current thinking. We see gas and transmission infrastructure developing in the Fargo area over coming years that may make a Red River Valley unit very cost effective out in that 20 to 25 time frame. We currently project a resource need, I think, out in that time frame generally. Mr. Wishart can give you more detail. And so there could be the need for additional generation on our system in that time frame. The difficulty we have is trying to translate that into a hard and fast requirement. And that's where we are very much interested in trying to work with staff to develop some language around the policy that's trying to be achieved without creating a problem over a commitment that needs to be changed and will create problems because of unforeseen circumstances.
What would the process be in Minnesota, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, if there was a requirement that some generation be built in North Dakota, what would have to happen in Minnesota for the company to do that? Do you know?
The process in Minnesota is laid out so that we would have to go through a competitive acquisition process similar to the one we're currently in order to add generation. Since on a system basis, roughly 75% of that generation serves Minnesota customers and is paid by Minnesota customers.
That's all the questions I have.
Hey, Mr. Simpson, any redirect on any follow-up on any of the questions?
Mitch covered most of my questions, so no, Your Honor.
Hey, anything else from the commissioners?
Just a quick thought, if I could, Your Honor. I appreciate your discussion with Mr. Armstrong just now about the changing dynamics of the Fargo gas market, because that is one thing that this commission is working on gas lines that are running through Fargo all the time. So if this plant could be built right next to the Mapleton sub, would it then add reliability to the Fargo system?
Again, it would enhance in reliability in the sense that you're closer to customers and there's fewer things to go wrong between you and the customer. But if something does go wrong between you and the customer, you still got the problem.
And I should have asked this before, but the whole Minot is an outlier. When you look at your resource planning, what are you going to be doing about Minot? You don't own any generation up there. You basically buy everything to serve the Minot load from somebody else. Are you looking at building something up in the Minot to meet your generation needs up there?
We have not looked at generation in the Minot area. Currently, we are part of a three-party transmission planning effort to ensure reliability, WAPA, I'm sorry, what's the other utility in this area?
MDU, Otter
Tail. MDU, sorry. Are conducting a study to make sure that the transmission system can reliably meet resource needs out there.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple more.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
And I apologize because I know you talked a little bit about this earlier, but tell me again, in your testimony you filed, it talked about Black Dog being the common denominator as clearly a prudent choice. And then the negotiating the power purchase agreements with Calpine or Invenergy. But you're doing those first. Why not do Black Dog first if it's clearly the top choice?
Um, the proposals that were presented by those, by Calpine and Invenergy, had specific in-service dates in those proposals. Mm. So that's what we evaluated. And when you evaluate based on those in-service dates, the best packages included Black Dog 6 and 18 or 19. We raised the question that you're alluding to as part of the Minnesota process and said that we would like to explore adjusting in-service dates and what impact on cost that might have to see if we could have a better combination of resources that to test that very question. Would it make more sense to build Black Dog first and then give those other projects time to build later? It's going to have an impact on their price, and so we need to evaluate that. But our recommendation is to explore that very question.
And what positives do you see from a company standpoint of going forward with Black Dog first?
Time is starting to run out to get that unit in service by 17, so that's going to be one consideration. We have to retire the existing coal units at that site before we can get in there with a new unit. Mm-hmm. So 18 may be a practical earliest point in time, depending on how long this process takes. But then I think it's primarily a cost question after that.
Okay. And then going back a little bit again, in your page 10 of your testimony, you say that you're talking about Invenergy and Calpine's projects. The net present value difference is so small that the top two plans should be considered to have essentially the same net present value. So I'm curious, does the company have a threshold whereby you can consider them the same? So like $1.8 million difference is essentially the same, but $2.2 million is not? Or what is the threshold where you consider them essentially the same?
Commissioner, it's a good question. I don't think we have a specific threshold per se. I think it's a judgment call. I think that the total present value of the various plans is shown back on page 9 in the column that says 2013 to 2050 PVSC in millions.
Mm-hmm.
So the total costs are in the $45 billion range. And so it's just a qualitative judgment that plus or minus a few million out of $45 billion is not a strong differentiator. When you get that kind of close sort of stuff, that's where you start looking into the details of the model, as we discussed earlier, to see what's driving those results. And
do you feel that the Red River Valley Unit 1 should be kind of thrown in there too, or Plan 3?
Just on a pure difference of present value,
yes,
they all are relatively small, and you need to look into the details of the model to see what you can learn, yes.
Okay. And if the company had, did the company consider advocating for Plan 3 or even just Plan 1, 2, and 3 equally with the Minnesota Commission?
We certainly considered it, thought about continuing to advocate for our proposal without change.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to balance the total cost of energy for our customers with a lot of the issues that have been debated here, and at least this time around lean toward proposing to negotiate those PPAs.
And I realize you can't predict the future, but how big a difference do you think that would make with the Minnesota Commission?
if a strong enhanced reliability case could be made, I think there's room for debate. As you've heard from us, we have, at least I have, a tough time articulating how strong that case is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's all for me.
Go ahead, Commissioner Christman.
If there were a critic of this commission that felt that we were not taking reliability into consideration enough and said that the Red River Valley gas plants were just dangled in front of us so we'd approve the Courtney Wind Farm, how would you recommend we respond to that critic?
I would strongly object. Again, the Red River Valley units were selected not because they're in North Dakota, but because they're part of a lowest cost set of additions we could find on our system, regardless of location. I'm very hopeful. Well, first of all, it ain't over. The outcome of the Minnesota process and our ability to negotiate contracts is still in front of us. And so those are solid backup proposals in our view at this point. We may be in even better position to provide generation in the Fargo area as new infrastructure develops. And so we certainly intend to continue to look at those units for future resource needs if they're not chosen in this circumstance.
Thank you.
That's been referenced a couple times both by you and Laura, that, you know, we want to negotiate in the future. But if you don't have the load, you don't have the load. I mean, you barely can demonstrate the need for this. So I don't know what that means, that you want to keep in negotiation with us on, you know, some generation in the valley when there doesn't appear to be. And now is the time that you have some sort of need. So why would we say, oh, okay, well, down the road, it could be 15 more years?
Commissioner, you are correct that on a system basis, our load is growing fairly slowly. But nonetheless, we do anticipate additional resource needs out in that 2025-ish time frame. You get that far out, and there is some uncertainty, you're right.
So you're talking 2020, not like something in addition to what we're already seeing, just at the next potential point of load growth, having that built in somehow that we'd have a, you know, priority.
That's our view, correct, Commissioner? The additions that we see coming out of this process should take us into that mid-20s time period before we need additional generation.
Your Honor, I just had one more thought. I have to pile on a little bit to Commissioner Fedorchak's point. It was, I believe, Commissioner Weefall, Commissioner Kramer, and Commissioner Clark were given assurances prior to 2008 that Xcel Energy would someday build something in North Dakota. So I just put that back out there for anyone that didn't happen to be here, which was a whole different commission. So that was a commitment by the company a long time ago that still has not been met today. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Norell, anything else?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Alders, do you have your testimony in front of you?
Yes.
On page 10, this is Commissioner Fedorchak had highlighted this in lines 7 and 8. It states that the top two plans should be considered to have the essentially the same net present value. On page 9, under the column 2013-2050, PVSC in millions, Could you read that dollar amount under Plan 2?
$45,368,000,000.
Could you read the dollar amount under Plan 3?
$45,368,000,000 is what it reads.
Could these two be considered to have essentially the same net present value?
Pretty close, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong, are you done, Mr. Norrell?
Yep.
Yep, okay. Mr. Armstrong.
Mr. Alders, what is PVSC?
Present value of social costs. Typically, it includes a value for the risk of future carbon regulation.
And it includes environmental externalities?
Yes.
Did you evaluate the PVRR?
Yes, we did.
Is that somewhere in the records?
I'm not certain that it's in anything we've provided you in this record or not.
What is PVRR?
It's the same present value of revenue requirements calculation, but without externalities or carbon risk.
And I think we'll be requesting that as a late filed exhibit if it's not in there.
It's in the record as Schedule 1 to Mr. Alders' testimony on page 39. It's Table 9 of Strategist Input Sensitivities Tests. One of the columns has a zero CO2 number. So that
schedule. What was the schedule?
Sorry, it would be Schedule 1 of Mr. Alders' testimony on page 39 of that schedule.
It should be page 39.
Schedule 1 in mine is Mr. Alders' resume.
Mr. Alders. Oh, sorry, Schedule 2 then. My apologies.
Oh, okay.
Could you, Mr. Alders, are you on page 39 of your testimony?
I am. This is the attachment to schedule, yes.
Okay, so it says, at least on mine, it says Table 9, Strategist Input Sensitivity Test.
Got yes.
A table there? Okay. And that table has the 20 plans that correspond with what we've been talking about on page 9?
Correct.
And there's a column that says $0 CO2. Do you see that? It's kind of in the middle, more towards the right side of the page?
I do.
Would that be the PVRR analysis?
Yes.
Could you help me how to interpret that? For instance, number 2 says plus 23 and number 3 says plus 3. What does that mean? Let me tell you.
This schedule is Mr. Wishart's testimony in the Minnesota case. I think he can give you a lot more detail than I can.
Am I reading it wrong anyway that as far as with $0 for the CO2, that plan number 3 is actually less of an increase to plan 1 than plan number 2?
I believe that's correct. I think it's I lose track of what it's relative to, though.
I think you testified that Black Dog is a result of retiring coal. The Black Dog CT is a result of retiring coal at the plant right now. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why is the coal being retired?
We have 2 coal-fired units remaining at the Black Dog plant, units 3 and 4. They are subject to the new air quality rules coming out and it would require something on the order of $200 or $250 million in pollution control equipment to keep them running. They were built back in the '60s, and when we evaluate the cost of control versus the alternative of replacing them, it's more economical to replace.
One of the questions I've had, we've been talking about Plan 1 and Plan 2, and Plan 1 is Invenergy with Black Dog, and Plan 2 is Calpine with Black Dog. And as I understand it, there will be negotiations with Calpine and Invenergy to see what's more cost-effective. Is there the potential that those negotiations would result in Invenergy and Calpine being put together versus either one or each with Black Dog?
There is that potential. In fact, the Department of Commerce, who is the consumer advocate in Minnesota, has in essence said you ought to pick from all three proposals once you have those PPAs drafted.
Has Calpine and Invenergy as a plan been modeled? I don't see it in...
As I recall, it was modeled, but it didn't reach the top 20. Mr. Wisher can give you more detail there.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, Mr. Zinser, anything you want to follow up on?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, then I'm going to ask the witness to step down and call your next witness up. Plan would be to go till about 10 to 12 and then take a break for lunch till about 1:15.
Your Honor, do you think not to just maybe just take a break now and come back at 1 rather than just try to start 15 minutes into it? Because it's if that's okay with you, Your Honor.
Sure.
That'll get everyone?
About 10 after 1.
1 o'clock?
What time, Your Honor?
About 10 after
10 1. 10 after 1, okay.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
You're in.